Hello. One of the things that the COVID-19 pandemic taught us was that it is possible for most organizations to work more remotely than they were doing in the past. So in this video, I want to talk about the difference between leadership face-to-face and leadership in a more remote, flexible, agile, whatever name you call it, environment. A lot of organizations have found that there are benefits for working in this way, both for the organization and for individuals. But do we have to lead in that kind of remote environment in a different way than the way that we lead in a face-to-face way? Well, the simple answer is no. Leadership is leadership. Now, whether we lead face-to-face or we lead remotely, the simple answer to that is no, we still need to lead people in the same way. But how we do it is different. And that's probably the most important bit. It's not what we do, but how we do it that's got to change. So I want to look at some sort of top tips for leaders generally and look at what the difference is and between leading face-to-face and leading remotely. So these are my top 10 leadership behaviors. And I think if you're exhibiting these behaviors, then you're probably doing okay as a leader. You're probably getting the best out of the team and the individuals, and you're getting the job done effectively. So number one is have a vision and a purpose. It doesn't matter, I believe, what level you are within an organization. If you have a vision for your team, for your individuals, for the task, and a purpose, because a team really has to have a shared purpose. So unless you've defined it, it's very difficult to share it. So have a vision and a purpose. Give feedback in a structured way and make sure you give feedback. Remember, feedback is just information on the results of somebody's behavior. And make sure you thank people and you thank them for doing the job that you're paying them to do, not just for going the extra mile, but for doing the job that you expect them to do. Show your appreciation. Number three, communicate effectively. Make sure you have a mutual understanding of whatever information you're trying to communicate to the rest of your team. Use the different methods that are at your disposal. Use technology, but make sure you communicate effectively and regularly. Make decisions. You might get it wrong sometimes, but actually, it's okay to be wrong. It's also okay as a leader not to have the answers to every question. That makes you human. It's far better than trying to bluff or blag your way through a situation because people will see through that. Make decisions, be decisive. Sometimes they're wrong, that's okay. I always say that a ship can't change direction unless it's actually moving. So you need to make a decision. You might need to change your mind at some point. That's all right. You're not a politician. Number five, empower people and delegate. Give people the authority and the responsibility for their own job to make decisions on their own behalf. And as long as they communicate with you, that you keep those lines open, but delegate what you can delegate and empower people to do the best that they can. Number six, show respect and trust and lead by example. The only way that you can gain respect from the people in your team is to respect them. The only way that you can trust them is by actually trusting them and seeing what happens, and then trusting them more, and so on. So lead by example. Number seven, inspire others. Inspire them with your vision and the way that you communicate that vision. Think about charisma. Think about your words, your way, and your body language all aligned. So believe in what you're communicating and inspire others to want to do the best job that they can for you. Number eight, set and share outcomes. So make sure that you set outcomes, you set goals for your team, for the tasks, and make sure that you share them and you monitor performance against those outcomes. Really make sure that everybody knows what's expected of them at any one moment in time. Number nine, allow people to be motivated. So people are primarily self-motivated. It's very difficult, if not impossible, for you to motivate people unless you're motivating them away from losing their job or from disaster, in which case you can. But allow people to be motivated. So create that environment. Understand what motivates people. Do what you can to give them that extrinsic motivation and allow them to be motivated themselves intrinsically. Number 10, create an open and honest environment. The more open and honest you are, the more open and honest the rest of the people in your team will be. And so the more and the more feedback you can give, the more feedback you can receive, the more people can communicate with you and bring problems or solutions or have ideas and create, allow their creativity to flow. But you need to create that open and honest environment. I've worked with lots of leaders who say, yeah, but my, you know, my office door is always open. But how many times do people come through it? And the answer is they don't. So what's really important is number 11, be visible and be approachable. If you're working in a face-to-face environment, I call it management by wandering around. But go around, talk to people. I remember coaching a guy once from one organization who sat in his office. It was a production environment. And I said, you know, you need to get out and see your people. And I said, so I'll set you a task. So between now and the next month when we meet, I want you to go out onto the factory floor every day and meet and chat to people. And he said, well, that's going to take me half an hour a day. So we'll give it a go and see what happens. When I saw him the following month, he was amazed. He said, I can't believe how much feedback I've got from people, how many problems they've come up with, how many solutions. What I know, I really start to understand what's going on with them. And so he blocks out half an hour every day to go and actually talk to people. So if you're not in a face-to-face environment, you need to do this in a virtual way. You need to find ways of making sure that you're visible and approachable online if you can't meet face-to-face. So that's what I want to move on to. I want to look at the difference between traditional leadership, face-to-face environment, and leading in a much more flexible and distanced environment, a virtual environment. So as we said in the introduction, leading a virtual or flexible team is the same, but it's different. So it's the same behaviors, but there are different ways of applying them, different ways of getting that information across, of interacting with your team when you can't see them face to face. So here are my kind of top 10 behaviors for leading a virtual team. Number one, be visible. Catch up with everyone every day. Now, how you do that depends on yourself, your organization, the way that you operate. But make sure that face-to-face you catch up with everybody, whether that's as a team meeting or individually, and whether that is visually on Zoom or whether it's by phone, or doesn't really matter how you do it. The best way to interact with people is visually. So video is the best way to interact. And obviously, there are things like Zoom and Teams and Skype. There's a lot of different platforms now that you can use to make sure you catch up with everyone every day. Now, the reality is in a face-to-face environment, you do this by wandering about. So it can be really informal. You know, it can be at different times during the day. It doesn't have to be the same time every day. It just depends on when you've got a flexibility, a gap in your kind of calendar for the day. If you're doing this in a virtual way, it has to be more formal, mostly in the sense that you really need to book that time out. So block the time out in everyone's diary, in everyone's calendar. It is obviously possible to randomly just call in on somebody, but that's very difficult on things like Zoom. You can do it with you know, Messenger and so on. There are different things that can be kind of more proactive. But make sure you catch up with everybody in your team every day. Number two, document everything. And the reason I mean document everything, it's not really about covering your own back, but that's, you know, that's an important general advice for anybody in a leadership role, is to make sure you document conversations we have with people. You may need to come back to them for performance management issues or something later on. But from this point of view, this is about documenting conversations you might have with a group of people that you don't have the whole team together. So that means that you can share all of that information with the whole team. So conversations that you had about a particular problem and ideas that you had that might have been an ad hoc conversation you would have had in the coffee room at some point, by documenting it and having a shared folder that everybody can drop into, or, you know, information that you push out all every day, you can use that. But be careful not to overwhelm somebody. I'll get onto that in a moment. Number three, sounds obvious, understand your team. So what your team does, what their roles are, and who they are, you know. So having those kind of social conversations with people are really, really important, especially when people are working on their own at home, where they don't get the opportunity to have social conversations with other people on a regular basis. And I would suggest that you make sure your team have permission and have the opportunity to talk to each other randomly, to have coffee meetings with each other, to meet for lunch, whatever it is. But, you know, talk to your team, understand what they do, because that helps you to delegate. It helps you to allocate roles and responsibilities and understand who they are and what motivates them, what they do in their private life. Those things can be really, really important. I remember coaching one leader who said that there's this one guy in the lab who I really struggled to get through to interact with. You see, he's always very kind of standoffish. So I said, so what's he interested in? He said, well, I don't know. I think he mentioned motorbikes once. So I said, well, you know, just have a conversation with him about bikes. Just as you pass through the lab, you don't have to make it a big formal thing. And the next time I saw him, he said, that was unbelievable. I said, you know, I just said to him, did you go out on your bike at the weekend? And we had a conversation that lasted an hour. And now every time I walk through the lab, we have a chat. It's about work usually, but he's much more open and available to chat with me than he was before. And that's purely because you're building a rapport and maintaining a rapport using the things that are interesting to them. Have regular team meetings. And I would suggest at least once a week. Lots of teams that I work with have a meeting at the start of the week to plan the week, a start at the end of the week, a meeting at the end of the week to see how the week went. And quite often with virtual teams, that meeting at the end of the week is like end of the day, a glass of wine, chill, bit of relaxed conversation about how the week went, getting ready for the next week. So you can set the tone for the meeting. So you can make that meeting less formal or more formal. Lead by example. So, you know, disclose things that are interesting to you or things that have happened to you. Behavior breeds behavior. So the more that you communicate to them in the way that you want to be communicated within each other, between each other, that's what's going to happen. The first interview I ever went to was for selling advertising space in a local newspaper. And it was a group interview. We sat around the table and we were asked what our interests were just to start the conversation. And I was the first person to answer. And I said, well, at the moment in my spare time, I'm building a motorbike that I bought in boxes and it's trying to put it all together. And it's taking up a lot of my time at the moment trying to renovate that. The next person said, well, I had a motorbike once and you know, I used to do trials on it and things. And the third guy said, I never had a motorbike. And everybody around the table mentioned motorbikes in the what they did in their spare time, even if they didn't have one or they'd never had one or they'd never wanted one. It became the sort of key part of the conversation. So leading by example will influence what you talk about and how you communicate within that team meeting. Number five, be aware of how individuals feel within your team. So conversations with them are really important to understand whether they're feeling stressed or overloaded or overwhelmed or undermotivated or demotivated, whatever it is that you can put your effort in to make sure that you resolve that and get them firing on all cylinders. There are experience sampling apps that I've seen around. Now there's more and more of these around. Somebody I saw recently had a wristband that you could either tap happy or sad on it, which I think is a little bit kind of too extreme in the sense it doesn't give you a lot of information. But there are apps that will prompt you to answer a question or a series of questions at certain times during the day. So you could have a 1 to 10 stress level, for instance, on it. You could have a overloaded, you could have a motivated, demotivated, whatever works for you, whatever information you want. But it's a good way of understanding where people are at any particular moment in time. Of course, what that means is you've then got to collate it, but you're looking for trends. You can do that by your catching up with everybody every day approach. But I do know that organizations are using experience sampling apps to help understand how people feel all the time. Number six, those things help you keep on top of outliers. So people who are either outside of the group, their mental health or their performance is different to the rest of the group or is different to themselves. So we're looking for somebody who who has been doing really well and then suddenly their performance dips, or you know, they're off work more often, whatever. But you're looking for those exceptions, those outliers, those things that are different. And that might be people, or it might also be events. So, you know, do unknown, unusual things cause problems? So look for those outliers, and then you know that you need to put your effort in onto the team, the task, or the individual on the basis of things that are different. Number seven, leading by example again, but show respect and trust. As we've said before, the only way that you can get respect from the people who work for you is by giving respect and trust. You need to take those steps to trust people, because the whole flexible working thing works or fails on trust. We need to trust the people, because if they're going to get their work-life balance improved by working from home and working flexibly, then we need to trust that they're going to deliver, which is why setting outcomes and goals is really, really important. Come back to that. Number eight, reduce the amount of communications. So this is about avoiding repetition in particular. So, you know, making sure that your communication has landed. So I can see the situation where you might send an email out. You're not sure whether everybody's got it because they're all working from home. So then you message in the WhatsApp group that you've got, which is the informal way of connecting. And then you're still not certain, so you phone somebody up, and people are being overloaded and bombarded by communications. So reduce the amount you communicate, but improve the way that your communication lands. So make sure that you communicate the most important stuff in the best way that you can do. Number nine, and this is important too. I've done communications research in a few organizations where, you know, we've talked about things like team briefing and when did you last have your team brief, and people have said, I can't remember, we don't get communicated to. And when I ask the managers, it turns out the brief was only a couple of days ago, but the way that they did it was in an ad hoc way. So they had a briefing book, and when they had enough information in the book to hold a briefing session, they would do it. One of the things that we did was just swap to briefing being on the same Tuesday of every month. And when we went back to do the review, everybody said, yeah, it's great now, we get communicated to regularly. It was probably no more regularly than it was before, but because it was regular and timed and predictable, people felt that they were getting more communication. So be predictable with it. Make sure that, you know, if you're briefing the whole team, you do it at the same time every week or every month. Make sure that they're regular, so it's not like once 2 weeks and then 6 weeks and then 8 weeks and then 1 week. So make sure that you communicate in a predictable, regular and timed way. And that's really about the team's perception of how often they get communicated to. And number 10, focus on and measure outcomes. So this is really, really important. You know, we've been in a situation where in a face-to-face organization that activity or presenteeism is the thing that people are measured on. If they're there, they must be working. They look like they're working hard, so they must be working. And we know that typically in offices, people are productive for around 3 hours a day. The rest of the time is spent in non-productive activity. So if they're working from home, then let's make sure that they've got targets and they've got outcomes, because then we measure against outcome rather than are they at their desk for 8 hours a day. Because one of the main benefits for individuals is to manage their work-life balance if they've got a more flexible approach to work. So spending time at home, hanging the washing out or preparing dinner or taking the dog for a walk are all non-productive activities, but what they do is help people focus more when they are being productive. So if we set outcomes, then people can balance their work and life a lot more effectively than if we expect them to be sat at their computer for 8 hours a day and we keep checking to make sure that they're online. So there we are. Leading in a face-to-face environment and leading in a virtual environment is pretty much the same, but it's different. So it's the same processes, just the way you deliver those behaviors is going to be different. I always suggest that the thing to do is to think about how you would want to lead people face to face and then find a way of doing it online. And there are lots and lots of technology that can help you do that. I know one organization who have a Zoom meeting going on all day on a separate device. So when if somebody wants that kind of ad hoc discussion, they can just say, John, have you got a minute? And they can join a meeting on this separate Zoom call and then get back to the work that they're doing. Failing that, then it is much more of a slightly more formal approach where you've got to either book time or you've got to see whether people are available, have a phone call or a face-to-face call. It's really important to do video face-to-face as much as you can. People respond much more effectively and efficiently to face-to-face. And, you know, if you are on a Zoom or a Teams call, make sure you've got your video on. Having the video off, it gives the impression that you're not interested, you're not engaged, you're not involved. So make sure, it doesn't matter whether you're wearing your pajamas for most people for most of the time. And it's important to remember that the small things matter. The thanks, the recognition, the praise, the remembering when somebody's going on holiday or when their partner's had a birthday, all of those things are really important. And whether they're face-to-face or in a virtual environment, they make a big difference. They certainly make a big difference in a virtual environment. So remembering those things, one of the reasons for documenting everything, you might, you know, you do at least have the advantage when you're on a Zoom call that you can research, you know, you can use your cheat sheets about the individual if you can't remember it all in that sort of detail. But make sure that you have that kind of human face as well as just being purely work related. There is a temptation on Zoom calls with team members to keep them short and keep them focused. I know that lots of people I work with use the 40-minute cutoff on the free Zoom as a way of reducing the meeting times. And one of the things generally I've found is that meetings are shorter and more effective. But it's really important not to forget that, you know, you're still talking to a human being. And if you're talking to a team member, that you're trying to build that rapport, you're trying to build that sense of belonging and being part of something, which is harder to do when you're not all meeting in the same room. One of the big advantages that research has shown about the using Zoom or Teams or the video call is that it reduces that kind of socialization in the sense that people are much more equal on Zoom, or people are perceived to be much more equal on Zoom or Teams or whatever than they are in sat around the table in an office. So that there's much more opportunity to have a more equal conversation than it is when you're in the same room. And that's an interesting thing. And there's lots of research that's going on, and we will find out a lot more about how effective these meetings are. I know from a personal view, personal feedback from delegates on courses, they've found the mix of face-to-face and video content more effective than being in the same room, because they can pause and rewind and go back over things. And so the face-to-face, whether they're in the same room or online, they find those really effective in kind of reinforcing that information. So it's good that we're finding out more and more about how effective working remotely is, both from a work-life balance point of view and from an organisational point of view. And from a leadership point of view, really, it's about leading the same way we would lead face-to-face, but doing it online and finding ways to make that work more effectively. It takes a little bit more effort, takes a little bit more planning, and in particular, it means we've got to be much, much more focused on outcomes than we have on just having people in a room and saying, oh, John, can you do this for me? So we've got to be more disciplined and more strategic as a leader. But all the technology is there to help us do that, and the rest of it is all down to us and down to our kind of thought processes. So I hope you found this interesting, and I hope you found it useful, and good luck with your remote leadership.